It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Now, from the Star Reynolds Sports Desk, your 93.3 KJR-FM Sports Headlines.
Sports Headlines at 3 o'clock, brought to you by VenueKings.com. Mariners lose to the Astros 4-2 yesterday. Robbie Ray on the mound today. He has been pounded, not just this year, but in his career against the Houston Astros. Absolutely pounded. He goes up against Justin Verlander. The Astros rocked Ray in his last outing. Meanwhile, this is Verlander's sixth outing against the Mariners in 19 starts. How does that math work out? Six of his games have been pitched against the Mariners this year, and he is 4-1 against them. DK Metcalf has signed a three-year, $72 million extension, including $58 million in guarantees, and a wide receiver record $30 million signing bonus. We've got some information on Jamal Adams. Turns out he broke his middle finger on his left hand during practice on Wednesday, but is expected to be back on the field to play in early August and will wear a special cast over his hand during the season. The Bucks fear that center Ryan Jensen could be out for the season with a knee injury. George Kliavkoff today talked about the Pac-12 actively exploring expansion. You will hear from the commissioner of the Pac-12 coming up next right here on 93.3 KJR-FM. Let's get to it.
And now, two goofy, wacko, out-of-touch homers. Just brutal radio. Just horrible.
Live.
41 yards.
From Elliott Bay.
Can you feel it now?
This is Softy and Dick.
Softy and Dick on a Friday without the soft one. Hugh is here. It is Pac-12 Media Day. Normally, we are coming to you live from some banquet room in some hotel in some neighboring part of Los Angeles, but not today. We are here. We are in the 93.3 beautiful studios overlooking Elliott Bay, but we are going to bring you Pac-12 Media Day like we would always bring you Pac-12 Media Day. George Kliavkoff, he spoke today. We're going to give you some of those cuts in just a moment here. Kalen DeBoer, the head coach of the Washington Huskies, will join us at straight up 4 o'clock today. Lincoln Riley, the head coach of USC, will join us at 5:30. And Heisman Trophy candidate Caleb Williams, the quarterback of USC, will join us at 5:45. Lofa Tatupu at 6. So, you, a busy show, my friend, today. Busy football.
A lot going on. It's this kind of tornado of change in college football, involving a lot of aspects. Many of which are legal. I mean, it's really kind of fascinating if you're interested in the nexus of sports, law, business, antitrust. And here we are as Pac-12 fans right in the middle of it.
It has been the busiest offseason in college football that I can ever remember. I can't even remember one that came close to this one. And George Kliavkoff, the commissioner of the Pac-12, had to respond to it all. We had not heard from Georgie Porgy since the big news that USC and UCLA has spurned his conference and had moved to the Big Ten. So we wanted to hear what he had to say today. And he began by the Pac-12 with the Pac-12's effort to expand back to 12 or beyond after USC and UCLA leave.
We are actively exploring expansion opportunities. As we consider these opportunities, we will look at media value, athletic strength, academic and cultural fit, and geography from a recruiting and student athlete experience standpoint. As you would expect, we've had significant inbound interest and are in the process of evaluating opportunities.
Hugh, I understand they have to expand. They have to come up with some percentage of the loss of losing UCLA and USC. For me as a Pac-12 fan, for me as a Husky fan, expanding does absolutely nothing for my interest level in the conference, adding a San Diego State, Boise, a Fresno State, a UNLV, what have you.
Yeah. Well, I think it was interesting for Kliavkoff to have affirmed definitively that they are seeking to expand. And I agree with you. I can't imagine that a Pac-12 that had USC and UCLA was already getting tattered against the ropes from a national perspective. And now, in essence, you're trading USC and UCLA for any of the schools you just mentioned. That's a declining conference getting even worse. But at least we do have the commissioner on the record saying that's been one of the directives, and that's something that they're seriously in discussions about.
How about the other way? How about teams leaving the conference? He was asked that question today.
What gives you confidence that the 10 remaining schools are going to stay in this conference?
Yeah, we've had two board meetings a week for the last 4 weeks, and looking my colleagues in the eye and understanding their commitment and that their first priority is making sure that the Pac-12 survives and thrives and grows and is successful. They're committed to the conference, and I think the best thing to do is to ask them about it. And with respect to the Big 12 being open for business, I appreciate that. We haven't decided if we're going shopping there yet or not.
Shots fired, Hugh. Shots fired. I kind of like it because, boy, oh, boy, has the Big 12 been chirping. Man, the Big 12 have just been, they've been puffing out their chest since that report that the Big 12 said no, potentially, to teams from the Pac-12 moving over there.
Well, we'll see. As you said, they're puffing out their chests, and it's easy to crow a little bit, but you never know. Arizona State, the Four Corner schools, what have you, there may be interest in their minds. I think he's referencing the kind of intangible aspects of, okay, I'm looking in people's eyes. Well, he also conceded at some point during the day, may have been in the press conference, that he can't guarantee for sure that there won't be teams leaving. And I would kind of challenge him on his assertion that he said, quote, the number one priority in the schools is to maintain the preservation of the Pac-12. I don't believe that's the case. I think that each member institution, or at least the majority of the member institutions, are going to act on their own self-interest in a manner not terribly dissimilar to how USC and UCLA did. I mean, let's take Washington. I believe there's some level of desire that Washington would have to maintain as strong a Pac-12 as possible, but they would say, show me the goods. What's mm-hmm. what's in it for us?
Yes.
And if they have an opportunity to go to another conference, obviously, namely the Big Ten for now, as an example, then and there's a disparaging difference between what's best for Washington if they were to have that opportunity. Again, if, capital I, if.
Sure.
You know, you might be able to convince me that okay, the Pac-12 is going to win all ties. If Washington were to assume or conclude that they have roughly the same benefit.
Absolutely.
All things considered. Yes. I'm talking about all aspects considered. Then I could say, well, okay, if that's the case, let's try and be participants in in preserving the conference. But if there's a demonstrable difference, I think that each of the schools will act in their own interest.
Here's a follow-up question on the shopping in the Big 12 to Kliavkov.
You say that you haven't determined whether you're going to go shopping in the Big 12 or not. You don't hear something like that often from a commissioner saying they might target another conference's schools. Usually it's the other way around. They reach out to you. So has any members of the Big 12 reached out to you about potentially joining the Pac-12?
That remark was a reflection of the fact that I've been spending 4 weeks trying to defend against grenades that have been lobbed in from every corner of the Big 12, trying to destabilize our remaining conference. And I understand why they're doing it. When you look at the relative media value between the two conferences, I get it. I get why they're scared. I get why they're trying to destabilize us. But I was just tired of that. And, yeah, that's probably not the most collegial thing I've ever said.
So, yeah, caught in the moment, the heat of the moment. We all say things in the heat of the moment that we probably wish we could go and rewind them and put them back in our mouth. But he said it. And the whole puffing out the chest, the delusional nature of the Big 12 the last month has been really stunning to me, because when you just, it's just on paper, Hugh. It is on paper. There is nothing on paper that could show remotely that the Pac-12 is in a worse financial situation, a worse power situation than the Big 12. There's just no way that that even shapes out that the Big 12 is stronger than the Pac-12, even without USC and UCLA.
Well, I think if there were to be an argument to be made for the Big 12 and then having a stature that perhaps is greater and exceeds what you're representing, it may be that they have a certain geographic centrality that they would be in a position to poach some of the ACC teams, a couple of the good Pac-12 teams. And if they in fact want to, I'm not saying create a superpower that would be at the level that we now see from SEC and the Big Ten, but if they wanted to get grand designs and let's say North Carolina is more likely and Duke are more likely to join the Big 12 than the Pac-12, right? Florida State, Miami, there's some assets that even if you just said geographically are more accessible to the Big 12 than the Pac-12. That may be the cornerstone for the Big 12 having ultimately more potential to create a super conference than does the Pac-12.
But the Pac-12 does have that West Coast time slot that the Big 12 does not
have. How valuable has that been?
Well, we're going to find out, aren't we? We're going to find out in the next month or so how that valuable that is.
Yeah. I mean, the Big Ten's going to go first. They're going to get their media rights. But Larry Scott undoubtedly made a mistake by signing a 12-year contract 10 years ago. So, you know, that's just common in all negotiations. You know, look at all the athletes. You know, hey, we'll pay you a lot now. Oh, whoa. You know, it's 2012. Yeah. That's a lot of money. You're not thinking, 2024, maybe that's going to suck. Right. And so if you're going to jump into a long term contract, you better make sure that you're not going to be falling by the wayside. Well, clearly USC and UCLA thought that they were, and that's why they jumped. But I'm inclined to agree with a lot of what you're saying, but I don't dismiss the Big 12's ability to get real powerful. Mm-hmm. In part, like I said, they have stability right now. You'd say, wait a minute, they just lost Oklahoma and Texas. At least you know that the other schools aren't going anywhere. And so if they wanted to acquire, you know, 3, 4, 5, half a dozen assets and then go to market and try and get some media rights in some novel ways, maybe it's more, you know, streaming or whatever. I just don't know what their plan is, but I wouldn't just dismiss them as if they're some kind of, you know, Conference USA or something.
I agree. No, I agree with that. I think it's close, but I just think everything you've been reading out of the Big 12 is like it's an A and a B. It's not even a 1A and a 1B. Speaking of media rights, what's next for the Pac-12?
We have initiated our media rights negotiations. We are in the enviable position of being next to market after the Big 10. We already have significant interest from potential partners, including both incumbents and new traditional television, and most importantly, digital media partners.
George, when you look at the media rights deal and how it will be structured, how likely will it be that it's a non-traditional partner, Amazon, Apple, one of those sorts that ends up with tier one rights or at least a major chunk of what you guys show?
Yeah, without talking about individual potential partners, I would say it's highly likely that we will end up with a big digital partner for some of our rights. And that our rights will be distributed in a way that's unique and different and new. And we're excited about that.
That scares me and intrigues me at the same time, because I don't think you're going to get the eyeballs if a game's on Amazon Prime than you would if a game is on ESPN. But I do think Amazon has really, really, really deep pockets. Apple's got really, really, really deep pockets, and they are both headquartered in Pac-12 cities. So maybe those companies overpay for the eyeballs they're going to get. I don't know, man. I mean, it's interesting how companies of that size work.
Couple thoughts. First of all, I think for me, the interesting part of that last quote was when he said most importantly. I mean, here he's citing traditional sources of media rights, and now he says most importantly digital rights. He seemed to suggest that he sees a future where there's primacy in that over over cable television, for example? Like, okay, I know I'm older than you, but we're
similar,
closer in age, right? You know, and so guys like us are more likely. Do you not have a cable?
I have cable.
You're not a cord cutter yet, are
no,
you?
No.
Okay, so guys, you know, well, we're dinosaurs, or I'm a dinosaur. I have cable.
I still have a landline, Hugh.
You still have a line.
I have a home phone.
All right.
Okay.
Do you have dial up?
That's how old I am.
Do you have dial up internet? Are you AOL?
No, I don't have that. I don't have that anymore.
Okay. Well, but I mean, he's not suggesting. He's stating.
Right.
That they have a plan for a new mechanism to deliver their content. And he seems to be very excited about it. And he states that it will be more impactful than the traditional mechanisms for delivering the media rights. So I'm intrigued by it. I'm willing to say, look, maybe there is a branch of young people that are more like, you know, more likely to be card cutters and you know, just popping onto Amazon is just like, you know, as easy as brushing their teeth.
Yeah. Yep.
And so this may be the future.
With two kids, one of them approaching teenage years, he's got no idea whether a show's on cable or on streaming.
And he's got no idea.
He just knows where to find it, and he just goes and gets it.
And all the, you know, I'm assuming this is stuff coming out of the Silicon Valley primarily, you know, right there in the shadows of the Pac-12 offices. And if they're delivering the goods, meaning the money, then that would be a reason why Clay Offkoff would be excited.
How about NIL legislation? What does the commissioner say about that?
With respect to name, image, and likeness, I believe it is time for the 10 FBS conferences to step in and agree to NIL legislation and a strong, effective, and expeditious enforcement mechanism. All 10 conferences are strongly in favor of student-athletes being able to financially benefit from their NIL. But we also need three simple and obvious guardrails. NIL should not be used as an inducement. NIL should not be used as pay-for-play.
I agree with him. I just don't know how you enforce that. Do you have any idea, Hugh, on how you would enforce that?
No, I don't think you can because you're talking about it's immeasurable. How can you say, okay, in the process of trying to recruit a football player who knows that there will be NIL opportunities for him, how can you separate that and detach that from the recruiting process? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just asking people to be more than human. It's the same showdown we saw with Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher. You know, Nick Saban appeared to be trying to take some higher ground with regards to how Alabama was executing their NIL deals. And he admitted that they had about 25 players making at the time about $3 million. We hear from Ohio State that they needed $13 million. So we've got, it's a pretty big discrepancy, but we're well into seven figures on all of this. And to try and say, okay, this is not going to be an inducement. Tell me how that is going to be separated from the recruiting process. I think it's impossible. And now I know we cut the quote short, but he referred to the NCAA's paralyzation regarding NIL enforcement in the aftermath of the Alston ruling last summer, which was 9-0 against the NCAA. In essence, and I'm fascinated by that. I've read the entire 45 pages. It really, if you say, okay, well, what fascinated you? The Supreme Court is looking like the NCAA is a business model. They don't call them players. They talk about the labor. They talk about the suppression of the wages of the labor. The labor is the players. Mm-hmm. And so in ways that are crystal clear, the NCAA, and this goes back, and we can talk about the 1984 Georgia and Oklahoma Board of Regents questioning a suppression of TV opportunities and the NCAA loss on that one. They took it up to Supreme Court, and they kept losing at the lower courts, and they lost 7-2 in mm-hmm. Supreme Court. So the last two times the NCAA has weighed in on the model of the NCAA, the Supreme Court has weighed in on the model of the NCAA, the running tally is now 16-2. You got 9-0 a year ago. You had 7-2 back in 84. And you read the entire summaries of all of this, the entire rulings. What you're seeing over and over again is the Supreme Court looks at the NCAA and they repeatedly reject the NCAA's appeal to have some type of superseding law that would allow them to not be subjected to the antitrust laws. And again, the Supreme Court tells the NCAA, no, you're a business entity. You're engaging in predatory business practices that are outlawed. And so Kliavkov mentioned Alston, and he said that the NCAA is paralyzed, essentially, this is my paraphrasing, is paralyzed in their ability to enforce these NIL laws, and he's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly how the Supreme Court's ruling it. So we've got a hell of a conundrum on our hands to try and somehow consider the amateurism, consider the business nature of the NCAA, and find a model that most works for all parties. Right now, everybody's palms up on this.
We've got much more college football to come, much more from Pac-12 Media Day, including the head football coach of the University of Washington, Kalen DeBoer, at 4 o'clock with Hugh and myself, including Lincoln Riley, 10 years, $110 million coach of USC. That's at 5:30, including Heisman Trophy candidate Caleb Williams, the quarterback of USC, at 5:45. Also, Lofa Tutupu talking Seahawks at 6 o'clock. And we'll also get Lofa's take on USC as well, former USC standout. But coming up next, Hugh, we got a wide receiver that just signed a $72 million contract. Let's hear from him coming up next on 93.3 KJRFM.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hear us anywhere, anytime, on Alexa or Google Play. At Sports Radio 93.3 KJRFM and on the iHeartRadio app. Now, back to Softy and Dick.
Much more from Pac-12 Media Day. 4 o'clock today, Kalen DeBoer. 5:30, Lincoln Riley. 5:45, USC quarterback and Heisman Trophy candidate Caleb Williams joining us from Pac-12 Media Day. But we've got to talk a little DK Metcalf, and I think we all assumed this was going to happen. We just didn't exactly know when. We didn't exactly know how long the contract would be, but we have found out that it's 3 years, $72 million extension. And Hugh, before we hear from DK Metcalf in the press conference today, just your overall thoughts on the price tag, the length of the contract, maybe who got the better end of the deal, if anybody, in this situation.
I think DK got the better end of the deal because he only got 3 years. He's going back to market at age 27, and undoubtedly, had he signed a four-year deal, we were just kind of talking about this dynamic before. Whatever figure they would have arrived at had the Seahawks insisted and had Metcalf acquiesced to the demand of 4 years, whatever that figure would have been, it's almost inconceivable to imagine that it won't be more once he goes to market for year four, as opposed to playing under the terms yes. that he would agree to right now.
He will, one correction, he will be 28 because this is a three-year extension on top of this year's contract. So he's 25 this year, making $8.8 million. Had he signed a five-year contract, he would be 30 years of age by the time he gets to sign another one. And you're just not signing a 30-year-old wide receiver. I don't care how good you are. You aren't signing a 30-year-old wide receiver to a long-term big money contract. You are signing a 28-year-old receiver to a long-term big money contract.
Exactly. And so I just think that, I mean, he said out there today, after having, I don't know, I'm such a big Metcalf fan, so maybe I'm not the right guy to be objective about it, but I thought that there was a sincerity to him, or an appreciation, for him to have cited all the players. When's the last time you have heard any player at any position mention that many of his teammates.
Well, Russell Wilson does every week just to fill, fill time.
I thought about Russell Wilson, and I actually think while Russell Wilson, you know, held a steady and consistent high bar in that regard, I think Metcalf actually might have topped it in terms of I mean, he must have cited by name 15 guys.
Yeah.
I think Russell usually hovers around, you know, 10 to 12. I think Metcalf had a few, but the point is made. I don't know. I thought he sounded great, but in that, maybe uncharacteristically or contrary to the theme of his press conference, he did say that he, at some point wants to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Let's hear from, DK Metcalf, and he's a little emotional to begin.
You know, just coming from Oxford, Mississippi, all the way over here to Seattle is a long journey. I'm about to get emotional, so bear with me. It really hasn't hit me until now that I'll have the opportunity just to help so many people back home and help my family. And just thinking about when I broke my neck and I was told I wasn't going to be able to play football again, and now just this moment happening is just all a blessing. All my teachers, coaches from middle school, high school, my college coaches, college teammates, A.J. Brown, Elijah Moore, DeMarcus Gregory. Then when I get here and I meet guys like Russ, Bobby, Dwayne Brown, Tyler Lockett, Quandre Diggs, Al Woods, Freddie Swain, they push me and make it exciting just to come to work. And then the people that y'all don't get to see, like EK, Chad, Bowie, Mo Kelly, everybody in the kitchen, everybody behind the scenes, Brad Izick, sat down with me my rookie year. He was in the room with me, helped me go through all the plays. And it's just like a lot of people that I'm still forgetting the name, but just this moment is just all coming together just so I could be with this organization and this family that I get to call, you know, my family for the next coming years. It's just all a blessing, all amazing. And I just thank everybody because it took a village just for me to get here today. And just a big thank you to everybody to help me get to this point in my life, and I'm still not done, and that chip hasn't gone anywhere.
Okay, what was this process like for you for the last few months?
Like John said, it was stressful, but you know, at the end of the day, you gotta know your worth and know that something's gonna get done, and so that's all you could do, just to put yourself to sleep at night, and you know, just to pray that you get to come back to work and visit with guys like I named. But it was a stressful process, but glad that it's over now.
DK, you're getting the highest signing bonus for a receiver in NFL history. Was something like that important to you, to get some kind of marker like that?
No, I mean, we had, you know, goals that we talked about both on, you know, the team side and our side. But, you know, this is just, you know, an amazing moment to where I do get to help my family and the state of Mississippi and, you know, the surrounding communities, you know, for years to come.
DK, did seeing the other receivers get their deals during the offseason, did that add to the stress?
No, because like I said, man, something was going to get done, you know, whether, you know, it was going to be here, because I wouldn't, as much as I bluffed to John, I wouldn't leave him. So just let y'all know, I wanted to be here, I wanted to play here, and, you know, I'm just glad that we got something done.
You're competing or you're not, right?
Exactly.
John, for you, tell me
that. Did that add to the stress? Are you kidding me? Every time somebody signed this summer, if I'm DK Metcalf, I'm like, hallelujah, baby, way to go.
Right.
Jack that price up for me. But, you know, 16 names Jackson counted. 16 names.
Yeah, and not all of that in that soundbite. He came later. It was 16 of his teammates.
In that soundbite. Yeah, that sound. One name interested me. He thanked Russell Wilson, and yeah. I don't know if you necessarily have to thank Russell Wilson because Russell Wilson's no longer part of the franchise, but there is thought, and you've expressed that there may have been some tension between Russell Wilson and DK Metcalf as far as whether or not he was getting freezed out of games or not.
Well, there's room for two truths. He may have been frozen out of parts of games or even the entirety of games. But as Metcalf in this contemplative moment might have considered that, that there was far more good coming out of his relationship, both professionally and off the field, from Russell Wilson. So he felt compelled to thank Russell Wilson. I don't find that as a contradiction. I understand your point. Had it been really, a significant riff, then it would have been unlikely for him to have done that. My thought, if that's an act right there, he needs to quit football and go into acting, because he's a better actor than football player and he should be making Tom Cruise money. I was gripped by the sincerity of that and the gratitude and the humility. So I thought he made a phenomenal account of himself today in the press conference.
I think the Seahawks organization has a lot to be proud of over the last 24 hours. People love to rip organizations and, oh, this organization stinks, that organization stinks. You have two guys at opposite ends of their career, one of them in KJ Wright, profusely thanking the organization and Pete Carroll. And then you got a guy the very next day at the beginning of his career saying, I wasn't going anywhere. This is where I want to be. That's a testament to this organization, I believe.
I agree with you, and I'll tie that into an impression that I've had. You know, doing the radio gig here for all these years and going to camp, and certainly I was there for, you know, year one with Pete Carroll, and we would get these Seahawks would come out and do the interviews in training camp with us, and we get a chance to visit with them a little bit before and after, and I know you're gonna say, wait a minute. How do you get to know? No, we don't know them. We don't know what they're doing, you know, behind closed doors and their off time or whatever. But to the extent that, as you know, as a middle-aged guy that I who've been in a lot of locker rooms, to the extent that I can get a first impression about guys, the energy coming off of guys, I marveled at, wow, they really are targeting good dudes. They, you know, because time after time after time, we'd sit down with these guys, talk to them for 12 minutes. Again, you know, 3-4 minutes, 5 minutes prior to going on the air. And you just get this incredible sense of that. All of them, no. There were some guys that felt like, you know, maybe they had their cool jacket on, or you can't make conclusions on that. Mm-hmm. But it just struck me as it's a very high percentage of Seahawks that come across as really good dudes. And I don't think that's an accident. I think in the scouting process, I think that they are really you know, uncovering every stone to learn about the character of these guys. And I think as a result of that, they really value that time. But, you know, and it's manifested in other ways. Like, hey, are you all in? Are you a competitor? Do you have something in your background where you've had to conquer adversity? All those type of things they target. They might not say, hey, it's really important that we draft guys that when they go sit down with the KJR dudes, you know, for 17 minutes, that they make a good account of themselves. They're not thinking in that.
Right.
But that is tangential. That, you know, that is associated with, there's a correlation to what, while they're targeting these other more important things, it just so happens that it's highly likely that it's going to correlate to the type of impression that they make in a short order, the way we've experienced for several years.
Totally agree. There is one player, however, that is drawing the ire of fans and has drawn the ire of fans for a while now, and it just continues to happen. The latest on number 33 and how long he's going to be out again for the Seahawks next on 93.3 KJRFM.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hear us anywhere, anytime on Alexa or Google Play at Sports Radio 93.3 KJRFM and on the iHeartRadio app. Now back to Softy and Dick.
Softy and Dick without the soft one, but Hugh Millen is here talking football all day long. Started with George Kliavkoff. We've got Kalen DeBoer come up at 4 o'clock. Lincoln Riley, Caleb Williams, Lofa Tatupu, all in the back half of the show. But right now, Hugh, we've got this guy we traded for. We traded a lot for him. Gave him a lot of money. Haven't seen a lot in return. And now the news that it was very nebulous yesterday as what was wrong with Jamal Adams' fingers. And Pete Carroll seemed very concerned. And then today we find out that Jamal Adams broke a finger on Wednesday at practice when it got stuck in a helmet. Ian Rappaport reporting he's expected to be back to practice. Special cast for games. If he has surgery, which is likely the plan for it to be in the off season. So again, for the third consecutive year, Jamal Adams is going to be playing for the Seahawks at less than 100%. And I don't know if I should just put my Homer hat on and say, way to go, Jamal, way to tough it out, let it go. Thanks for playing hurt. Or if I'm just to say what I'm really feeling, and that is it seems like we know what the end of Jamal's story is. He's going to play hurt every single year, and he's probably going to be out of the league by 30. And this is just going to go down in history as one of the worst Seahawk trades of all time.
Well, okay, there's a lot of long-term speculation there.
Yes.
I'll just keep it closer to 2022. I'm not saying I agree or disagree with that, but what I'm focused on is as I understand it, he's had a couple fingers fused in a somewhat of a claw position, and that's a concern because when you want to catch a football, you want your fingers open, and when you want to tackle, you want to have the ability to grab. I mean, unfortunately, I know more about making tackles in the NFL than I wish I knew about.
Well, you don't have to worry about the first part here. You don't have to worry about the first part because he doesn't make picks anyway.
He doesn't make the picks.
Just worry about the tackle.
Okay, so that's a concern that that having fused fingers is going to impact his tackling. It would also be a concern if it's in his head and he's experiencing any pain and he has any reluctant, you know, let's say as opposed to wrapping up, he wants to just shoulder tackle and in some way, you know, not play the game in a way that he should with his hands in an effort to avoid pain or maybe it's not a pain factor. He just feels like he's not as efficient as he once was because now he has fused claws. That's a concern. So, I guess you could just say it's piling on to the other data that we have that leads at least me to a conclusion that it's been a disappointment. I just keep going back to Troy Aikman. I mean, Troy Aikman and I were teammates. I understand how he thinks in terms of attacking personnel, in terms of attacking coverage. And there's this indelible moment. Actually, there's been more than one where he's in a game and in my theory, because Tony Romo's done all this predictive stuff that has brought him all this acclaim, you know, Troy's been doing a little bit more of that lately, you know, calling out things before the snap where I don't remember Troy doing that as much. And he's circling Jamal Adams on the field, who's lined up not against a tight end. It was against a running back. I mean, it was the Rams. And I looked up the Rams running back, how many career receptions he had. He had seven career interceptions. And here Aikman is sitting there saying, he's circling Jamal Adams. Why? Why is Troy Aikman circling? He says, you got Jamal Adams here if you want him. He is taking his quarterback-trained mind, and he's telling us that's the pigeon. Mm-hmm. If you're amplifying Aikman, he's saying, if I was the quarterback, I would find Jamal Adams, even with the running back, not George Kittle, even with a running back, and I would attack him. That's what he's saying. Like, do we understand this? Now you can say that you can attach no significance. You can attach very little significance. But what you can't do is refute what Troy Aikman is telling you there. And so, and then there's the PFF ranked 62 and, you know, some of the other objective facts that you can debate the significance or not, but you can't object, debate the factual nature of that, the evidence that builds the claim that this has been a colossal disappointment.
Don't try to validate a bad trade by throwing money at it. And I don't know how many times Softy and I sat here before that contract was signed by Jamal Adams and said, both of us said, why don't you just play him under his fifth-year deal? Play him under his rookie contract. Play him in 2021 yeah. under his rookie yeah. contract to just yeah. make sure. Then you have 2 years of evidence of Jamal Adams to know whether you want to give him a long-term contract. And yet they decided to give him the contract early and basically treat him like DK Metcalf when he has done absolutely nothing to show this football team that he's a star like DK Metcalf is.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll give you another piece of objective data that cannot be disputed. The only thing that can be debated is the significance. When you see the Seahawks play cover one, okay, you get 1,000 people in football, knowledgeable football, they know what cover one is. It's man-to-man with one free safety. It's one of the most basic coverages in all high school, college, and pro. And when you see Ryan Neal lined up in man-to-man against the more accomplished tight end and Jamal Adams against the less accomplished as measured, because I want to keep this all factual, as measured by receptions, receiving yards, and touchdowns, mm-hmm. the less accomplished either tight end or running back, and Ryan Neal, not much more than a minimum wage guy, is the guy in cover one. I ask you, do you think that's a problem? That you're paying a safety the highest level in the history of the position in the entire NFL, and when you play cover one, you say, no, Jamal, you don't take cover the best. George Kittle, it's right there on tape. This is undisputed. No, Jamal, you don't cover George Kittle. Ryan Neal, you cover George Kittle. Now, those are facts. You want to say they're insignificant? I'll debate you a long time. But again, I'm laying facts out for you for yep. my claim. It's a subjective claim, which is this is a colossal mistake and I don't want to call it calamity, but it's been a terrible error. Bleacher Report. They had the 10 worst trades in the NFL for this decade. You know who was number one? The number one worst trade in the NFL for these 10 years.
Jamal Adams
to the Seattle Seahawks. Okay. If you want to not attach significance to it, but that is a fact.
Well, I'll give you, as we wrap this segment up, because I want to go on to brighter things, like talking to the head coach of the Huskies in the next yeah. segment, Kalen DeBoer, I'll give you some facts. Fact, Jamal Adams is going to play the 2022 season less than 100%, just like he played the 2021 season less than 100%. Fact.
Remember the torn labrum, right?
Yes.
Not just the fingers.
And the shoulder. Yes.
Number two on the torn labrum in the shoulder.
Fact, he's a $9 million cap hit this year. Fact, he's an $18 million cap hit next year. Fact, he is a $23 million cap hit in 2024 with a $14 million dead cap if you want to cut him. And fact, he's a $25 million cap hit for 2025 if you want to keep him for the full length of his contract. Those are facts, and those are really, really scary if you're a Seattle Seahawks fan. Kalen DeBoer, head coach of the Dogs, coming up next after Top of the Hour headlines on 93.3 KJR-FM.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.